the freedom of expression, the only people who are going to be allowed to freely express themselves, Ms. Fokani, to take the floor. Thank you. Now, I'm sure you've got the drift of things, and that is, you know, about 20 minutes max input, and then we're going to do the questions and engagement together, and then hand over very nicely to Khasiso Media. He's a very nice chap, right?
Good morning. Thank you very much, Chair. Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you for the opportunity for us, Freedom of Expression Institute, to present our views on the Copyright Amendment Bill. My name is Kisi Fokani. I'm the Executive Director of FXI. I'm joined by my colleagues, Ben Cashton, who's a filmmaker, and Mandy Bunta, a poet. So in terms of our presentation, I will talk a little bit about freedom of expression and how it's related to fair use. And Ben and Mandy will take us through some practical examples of the importance of fair use, particularly for South African creatives. Very briefly about the Freedom of Expression Institute. It's an NGO that was formed in 1994 to promote and defend the right to freedom of expression, to oppose any form of censorship, to promote access to information and knowledge, and to promote access to media and ICTs. The mandate derives particularly from Section 16 of the Constitution, which states that everyone has the right to freedom of expression, which includes freedom of the press and other media, the freedom to receive or impart information or ideas, the freedom of artistic creativity, which extends to academic freedom and freedom of scientific research. So in terms of our submission, we welcome, I think, the amendments in as far as the fair use doctrine. We welcome the amendments to the bill in terms of the fair use doctrine. From a freedom of expression and access to information and free flow of information and ideas, we view it as an important enabler of freedom of information and access to knowledge. We welcome, I think, the developments in terms of fair use and user rights, particularly the component around the four-part balancing test. We think that it's a mechanism that will allow greater certainty and clarity in terms of user rights and also in terms of copyright owners' rights as well. And I think where we are at the moment with the bill is establishing the parameters around the extent to which users can use copyrighted material within the currently kind of closed list of purposes. So I think we welcome it as a positive development in terms of critique, review, news reporting, comment or illustration, parody, satire, caricature, pastiche. Even though I think we will, and my colleagues will probably make the point a little bit later, we would still argue for more open exceptions, which would allow for greater innovation. I am going to hand over to Ben Cashton and Mandy, and the second part will really be demonstrating, I think, areas where we think the bill could be strengthened, and they will take us through some practical examples of fair use from a creative perspective. Ben?
Thanks, Tusi. My name is Ben Cashton. I produce television shows and documentaries, some of which get broadcast and some of which don't, not only because they don't make it onto TV, but sometimes they almost make it onto TV, but then are cancelled at the last minute. I produced a documentary about Thabo Mbeki that was commissioned by the SABC, but the former president, excuse me, honourable member, the former president Thabo Mbeki that was commissioned by the SABC and never shown. And the SABC used its assertion of copyright in that film to say that the film should never be seen by anybody. There was a bit of an uproar in the press, and eventually under public pressure, the SABC showed the film. It had earlier asserted that there might be legal problems with showing the film, but that argument disappeared. I also produce a television show called The Big Debate, which sometimes airs on national TV and deals with issues of national importance. I'm a creator and a user, as I think all creators are, because I think the main point that I want to make is that those of us who create need to use the words of others. Those of us who make films need to use the images in our minds and in our films that others have previously used. Those of us who make music need to have in our minds the music of others and sometimes use the music of others in our music. And it often is the case that the music and the art and the words that help to inform our creation as creators is copyrighted. And if it is copyrighted, if it's the work of others, we should definitely attribute or credit those who created an original work that we are using. But we shouldn't necessarily be prevented from using those works, and this is the debate that we are all having about fair use. Because anyone who creates also recreates using that which has gone before, taking the words, taking the images, whether they be monuments that you've seen, whether they be quotes in newspapers, whether they be films, and recreates using that content. And we've brought with us today somebody who recreates using a form that hasn't been discussed, as far as I know, in any of the deliberations so far, and that's why we asked her to come, and isn't referred to explicitly in the bill at the moment, which is why we asked her to come. And that form is poetry. So with your support, we'd like to give 2 minutes of our presentation time to a poet by the name of Mandy Bundler.
Where is she? Right. Just a moment. Will you turn your... it's Mr. Cashton, is it? Right. What's the name again?
Mandy Bundler.
Yeah, just come to the front, please, to the desk in front. And switch off that mic and then put the other mic on. Yes. Go.
So the poem that I'm going to recite is titled Moving Through Music, and I've referenced lines from certain poems as well. The border lifts from the diaphragm, and Still I Rise is a melody sung by the migrant at sunset. With every string, she pulls her children into her breath, arches her back like a bridge in a song for abandonment. One good thing about music, when it hits you, you feel no pain. She makes music from being displaced. Home crumbles into a song. A chorus moist with feet waves a note to the land she is leaving through music, while home foams at the mouth with war cry. What happens to a dream deferred? It rots in a hymn, begging on the streets. The father is a rolling stone thrown in with the beat. The children sing in his absence. Music is food for the soul when the body is weak. Mother pours the gospel in with eyes sunken into songs of worship, singing for Christ to return her hymn from the streets. When the father rolls back in, mother sings to keep the peace. The border lifts from her diaphragm, and Still I Rise is a melody sung to keep the spirits up. The languages in our songs are filled with luggage, carrying migrants, struggles, and grief. I have a dream that one day we will sing like we are welcoming them in, because music is a continent without phobia, and one day we will learn to dance without chasing anyone out. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Now, in the poem of reference, And Still I Rise, that was a poem by Maya Angelou, and One Good Thing About Music, When It Hits You, You Feel No Pain, that's by Bob Marley. What Happens to a Dream Deferred is Langston Hughes, and I Have a Dream is Martin Luther King. And Darkness Cannot Drive Out darkness, only light can do that, is also Martin Luther King. Thank you.
I think that was a very practical example, which we do appreciate. Am I correct? Thank you. So do proceed. Now, we always wait until we've only got two mics up here.
Thank you. So thank you very much, Mandy. That poem for me is a poem about the power of language. For me, that's what I hear, the power of language and music and humanity, really, to overcome differences and borders. I think it's a poem which resonates in the context of the xenophobia we've witnessed in South Africa. And it's a poem which draws on at least four other speakers, poets, musicians, and political speakers, the lines of which, those lines you heard, the works that were drawn on, are copyrighted. And were it to be the case that Mandy was going to reproduce the whole of a Bob Marley song and put it on Google, put it on YouTube and link to it on Google, it would be a pirated song and it would infringe the rights of the original creator. But that small quote, that evocation of something, of a feeling or a thought in her work, we think is fair use. But we think, as Freedom of Expression Institute, that it's not currently covered by the fair use formulation in the bill. And that's why we asked her to come. Because the fair use formulation in the bill allows for research, criticism, reporting, scholarship, illustration, parody, and so on. But it's not entirely clear that a poem which uses an evocation of a feeling in the way that Mandy did, the lines for that purpose, is necessarily covered by any of those uses. You could argue that it might be illustration, but it might not be, because a metaphor is not necessarily an illustration of something directly. It can be to transmit a thought or a feeling. So that's a basis on which we want to argue that it would be beneficial to put in the bill something more open, because just as members here, honourable members here, said they would like to feel that they could take a picture with Nelson Mandela outside in the front of the building here, we'd like to think that you would also support the idea that poets and other creators could take pieces of other people's work and do something new and transformative. So it leads us to want to suggest that it would be good to have in your list, which currently is 8 items long and ends with ensuring proper performance of public administration, a 9th item that says any transformative use that enables creative expression. Sorry, we haven't got it on a slide here, but we can...
You don't have to, just give us the section.
Yeah, so it's section 12 of the Principal Act, with the list...
Members, we've all got the Act, and I think it's very useful. You won't realize how useful it is until we come to deliberate, that you make these notes immediately.
So it's section 12, which lists the purposes...
12 what?
12-1-A. 12-1-A.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's the section 12 being amended by item 10 in your amendment, I think. Yeah. And item 8 was ensuring proper performance of public administration as an exception to copyright, and we're suggesting perhaps add another item which says any transformative use that allows creative expression, because that's what Mandy's poem does. It's creative expression that transforms the original. And then there could be a 9th, there could be a 9th use included there, which would be artificial intelligence and machine reading. And that is demonstrated by uses of copyrighted works which are computer-simulated intelligence, computer artificial intelligence. I have a little demonstration of that, which I've done before, which involves a little bit of music and takes 3 minutes. Should I include that now, or have members heard that already? We did it in the workshop, and I think you were all present.
Workshop, members. I don't think, was part of the public hearings.
Should I do it for 3 minutes now?
Well, it's a pity it couldn't have been reduced to 2 minutes, because you've only got 5 minutes left.
I can do half of it. How about that?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a simulation of what a computer can do with copyrighted materials that involves artificial intelligence and requires a computer to read materials that are... okay, let's do it. Yeah, I think it'll work. Yeah. And just to say, okay, here we go, it's going to work. This is a simulation of artificial intelligence. So I'm just going to speak to the system and say, log on to the South African History Database.
You are now logged into the South African History Database.
What was the famous speech... Oh, sorry, when did apartheid come into law?
Apartheid came into law in 1948 after the election of the National Party.
What was the famous speech made by Mandela in the dock about dying for the struggle, being prepared?
When he was in the dock, Mandela talked about the system of white supremacy and his struggle for freedom. His speech ended with these famous words.
I have cherished the idea of a democratic and free society. It is an idea for which I hope to live for. But my Lord, if it needs be, it is an idea for which I am prepared.
Into the South African History Database.
Okay.
That's a good
ending. Okay, let's end there. And let me make the final comments about this then, even though you only got a tiny piece of that. To say, there are two uses that we're adding to your list, that we're proposing to add to your list. One is any transformative use that allows creative expression, and the second one is artificial intelligence and machine reading. But we can't predict how many additions to that list may be necessary in the next few weeks, months, or years. And that's because there's innovation of different types of expression, different types of technological uses. And this is another call, you've heard several before, for there to be an open addition to the formulation which says, instead of for the following purposes, for purposes such as the following. Because that would allow you not to have to meet and hold these committees and change the legislation every few months or every few years when a new use...
Section.
And that's in, section 12, subsection 1A, which lists use in respect of a work which does not infringe copyright. It would be preferable to put purposes such as, not just the following purposes. And then my final comment is about this concern which has been raised that you would need a lot of case law and you could potentially have litigation by copyright owners. I think one of the honourable members mentioned this.
Let me interrupt you. It's page 9 of the bill, section, well, it's the new 10, section 12 of the Principal Act. It's
That's
hereby
it.
Amended by the substitute for subsection 1, in addition to uses, etc. So line 15, 16, 17, 18, where you have for the following purposes, and the suggestion is...
Purposes,
instead of
for the following purposes...
Such as.
Correct. So then, may I proceed with the last comment? So my final comment about this concern which has been raised that creators like myself and those with few resources in South Africa would be forced to constantly go to the courts to enforce their rights. It's generally, as we've heard, not a matter of going to courts, because the way these things are generally dealt with in a digital world is that you're applying to somebody online to take your work down or modify the way in which it's been put up. It's generally the first arbiter is not a court, but a YouTube or an online portal of some kind. Now, if I am a creator, which I am, and I'm uploading materials, or somebody else is uploading my materials, and I want to make sure that they haven't done so in a way which is unfair or constitutes piracy, I would rather have a clear fair use clause as a creator. I would not want a situation, and I wanted to ask actually any of the honourable members who had raised that objection, which I heard earlier, if I may, what they think would be preferable from a point of view of avoiding the situation where rights holders have to go to the courts. Because as a rights holder to my created work, I'd rather have this clear fair use clause, which doesn't only enable fair use, it prevents effectively pirated use by having subsection AA in the same section that we've just listed, saying that such use is only fair if it serves a purpose different from that of the work affected, and the substitution effect of the act upon the potential market for the work in question must be taken into account. So in other words, the law states very clearly that if somebody puts up something which is substituting for my original created work, then it will not be fair use. So I think, and I don't think this has been said before, but I think the fair use clause as drafted, and hopefully as we proposed it should be amended, is a defender, is a clarifier of the rights of content creators, because it states the narrow circumstances under which use is fair and other uses would not be fair. And I don't think it would lead to creators like myself having to run to the courts. Thank you.
No, thank you very much indeed. And if you could just make way then for Hachiso Media. Mr. Colin Dlamini and Mr. Dumasani, is it Imchali? And then you've got Mr. Mark Harris, wherever he is, and Ms. Megan Mavinos and Mr. Nick Clark. Right. And you're going to start immediately. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the members of the Portfolio Committee, the honorable members, for the opportunity to give us a chance to give us to give you an input on the views of Kagiso Media on the bill. Maybe to give you some background, we are a black-controlled company. We got media assets through our subsidiaries and joint ventures in broadcasting, information, new media, and content. The slide all just illustrates the portfolio of our assets. We are in We are in radio. We are in TV channels, digital channels, content, and sales. Just to set the scene, as Kagiso Media, we work with local musicians, composers, songwriters, actors, and in our capacity not only as a broadcaster but also as a creator of, and user of original works. We have an interest in ensuring that the South African copyright law adequately protects all owners and creators of original works. In principle, we support the strategic objectives of the bill, given its extensive dealing with the aforementioned stakeholders. We, however, have some problem areas and technical difficulties that are likely to arise in the industry if certain of the provisions remain as is in the bill. At this point in time, I would like to hand over to my colleague, Colin Dlamini.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to Sunny. Good morning, honourable members and guests. Chair, I'll just take you through the specific sections of the bill where we would like to highlight some of the practical difficulties that would be experienced by our sector and as well as some of the operations of Kagiso Media. The first
first section we'd like to take you through is Clause 2 of the bill, 2A, subsection 3, which provides that copyright protection can vest in tables and compilations, but the content of such tables and compilations is specifically excluded from protection. This is quite problematic for one of our subsidiaries, which is KLA, which is a research company that conducts research and formulates content of expert insights through review and interpretation of such data. It would just not be fair for an owner of such unique thought and content not to be able to rely on copyright protection. We've seen that from global research companies that their success can be attributed to the protection that they have in copyright. So we propose that this should be removed from the bill. Another issue that we have that has also been raised by other presenters is Clause 3.2a of the bill, which provides that copyright on every work which is funded by the state will be owned by the state. This is an issue for us because funded by, those words funded by are not defined in the bill. And we're not even sure on the scope of what this would mean. Does it mean partially funded works by the state would now be owned by the state, or is it fully funded? What about the incentives, the financial incentives that the DTI has put in place for emerging black filmmakers that we have used as Urban Brew Studios, for example, to promote films and make other work? So this is really going to thwart the DTI's aims of employment creation and the empowerment objective. So our recommendation is that the term funded by should be adequately defined to only apply to work which is fully funded by the state and should exclude commissioned work and incentives provided by the state. Clause 4, 5, and 6 of the bill introduces a royalty proviso in terms of which the user, performer, owner, producer, or author shall have a right to claim an equal portion of royalty payable for the use of such copyright works. Our practical difficulty with this issue, with these clauses, is the term user is not defined, as it is not clear where, if a user can be someone who is listening to the radio, or is a user someone who is watching a film. Really, it does not make sense to us, and we believe that users are the ones who are supposed to pay royalties to the owner or the author of such works. And furthermore, there's dire consequences on the creative industry as a whole. As Urban Brew, we create television content from concept to broadcast. And if we were to share royalties, if it would have to share royalties, it is due to the author and owner of all the actors, performers that appear in television series, as well as the producers of the show that are remunerated independently. It will disincentivize us from creating new works. Therefore, our recommendation is that we propose that the word user be removed or alternatively be adequately defined in the bill. And the bill should also clearly identify what constitutes use, if it should remain and be redefined. Clause 8 of the bill, which speaks to royalties and needle time rights, aims to formalize the process of royalty collections by requiring that any person who wants to broadcast, transmit or communicate a sound recording to the public must submit a prescribed notice in the prescribed manner to the copyright user, performer, owner, producer, basically requiring prior permission.
Sorry, Mr. Tlamini. If you refer to a certain clause, can you also refer to the sub-clauses, because it might be confusing when we refer to it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So, our practical difficulties with this is that in the radio stations, when you play music, you cannot now require prior permission from the owner of the song every time. I'm sure some people have heard when you listen to the radio that there would be people who call the radio station and request for a song. That means we would definitely have to change now all our music formats, and it's really impractical, and it would be a lengthy and cumbersome process. And it's unclear whether notice would be sent to some or all of the parties. So our recommendation to Kagiso Media is that whilst we acknowledge that the current collection process is flawed, rather than seeking to create an entirely new system, we should rather look at the current system that exists, and we should rather streamline the existing process and improve on it. The insertion of clause 9B, resale of royalties rights. So clause 9 of the bill says that authors of artistic work should enjoy an inalienable right to receive royalties at a rate prescribed by the minister on the commercial resale of his or her work. So the definition of artistic work is very broad and would include works such as, for example, logos or even cover art of books which we publish through Jutta, for example. So, on a practical level, this would mean that if a company that designs, or if a designer that designs a logo for us, or a cover art of a book, would now have to claim royalties on the resale rights of that work. I mean, we've already, these are people. For designers, these are people who have only a commercial interest in receiving their money upfront, not in receiving royalties for that logo or that design that they would have produced for us. So also what's problematic is that the royalty rate will now have to be prescribed by the minister, which now removes the power of negotiation from the artists themselves. Our recommendations on this clause is that the artistic works referred to in this clause should be limited to specific artistic works and should exclude commissioned works. And there should be scope for the parties to negotiate an agreement than to afford the minister these powers. On the insertion of clause 12, which has been discussed extensively in these public hearings, is the issue of fair use, which is and would like to reject it, as we believe it's not a concept which would apply in our context in South Africa. It works in the US, but we believe in South Africa this principle will open the floodgates to litigation, and this contradicts what the bill is trying to achieve. So access to justice in South Africa is quite lengthy and expensive, and even if it was to be heard in the tribunal which the bill seeks to establish, you wouldn't want to overburden the tribunal with just the issues of fair use, which would be everyone would be running to the tribunal to just try and adjudicate. So our recommendation is that the introduction of fair use should be removed, as this is not a tested principle in our law in South Africa, and rather we should just continue with what we have currently, which is fair dealing. Clause 11 of the bill applies, or the insertion of clause 12 the general exceptions and fair use. So clause 11 of the bill applies to all copyright works. Our problem with this is that this treats all types of works the same, and it's not appropriate and simply cannot apply due to the nature of other works. The ephemeral copies exception, which is already included in under section 12, subsection 5 of the Principal Act, now extends from literary and musical works to all types of works. This is already being abused in practice by some broadcasters, and with this inclusion, would now be opening it first to further abuse. Also, our recommendation is that these exceptions should be limited only to certain works and not be opened to all copyright works. The insertion of Section 13B, Reproduction for Education in Academia, this is quite problematic for our Juta company, which is in the publishing space. PASA has already made their submissions on this. However, we would just also like to point it out to this committee that it will further permit the reproduction, and it would now have situations where people can now copy a whole textbook, and therefore you'd be now really stifling the quality of education that we have currently. And our authors in South Africa that write textbooks, they're not writing for the entire global market, but specifically for the South African market. And now with these new provisions, you would be killing the publishing industry and companies like Juta. Our recommendation is that the provisions should be deleted in its current form and amended in closer consultation with industry leaders in the educational sphere. In the absence of a regulatory impact assessment that we, from the DTI, we have commissioned the PwC to conduct an independent economic impact study. And their findings were quite shocking in a fragile economic environment that we are in currently. The findings provide that sales revenues will decline in the industry by 33%, which can be extrapolated to an amount of 2.1 billion rand, and a decline in employment in the publishing industry of 30%, as well as a reduced willingness on the part of authors to create content for the broadly defined education sector. And this will potentially significantly have negative implications for South Africa's self-sufficiency in knowledge production and the dissemination of good education. The amendment of Section 21, which is the ownership of copyright, so clause 20 of the bill has a proviso that the author will have an exclusive license to exercise any right by virtue of the act where there is no contract governing the commission. So our problem here again is that authors don't have a commercial interest in the work that they've been commissioned to create, but will now have greater and wider rights. Where a small or incidental work created, for example, a jingle in an advertisement, it means now we would have to enter into numerous contracts for these smaller matters, which would become very cumbersome and would create an additional red tape, which is just not feasible from a practical level. Our recommendation is that we maintain the proposed wording, but remove the proviso that grants the author an exclusive license to exercise any right by virtue of the act. The amendment of Section 22 on assignments. So Clause 21 of the bill proposes that assignments of copyright are only valid for 25 years. This is an issue for us because it means that I would have to track down, for example, if we have commissioned an author to write a book for us, it means we'd have to track down the author and renegotiate an assignment of the contract after 25 years. And producers would likely purchase works from, this would result in producers purchasing works from abroad as works created in South Africa. Thank you, Chair. So this will disincentivize local musicians, composers, songwriters, actors, producers, performers, because one, they may have been commissioned to create such works and therefore have already been compensated. And two, they would in the meantime also be entitled to share in the royalties for the use of the work as contemplated in the bill. And three, they will have an opportunity in 25 years to renegotiate the agreement. And practically, Kagiso already, when we commission work, we inject massive capital into launching new campaigns and promoting that specific creative work. And we put money into marketing and we actually boost the value of the work. So now having the author to renegotiate with us after 25 years for, you know, for the assignment of the of the work is quite problematic. Our recommendation is that we remove the 25-year limitation on the validity of assignments. The insertion of Chapter 1A, collecting societies, we might point out that we welcome the provisions seeking the accreditation of entities such as collecting societies. And contrary to public perception that broadcasters are not paying royalties, we would like to clarify that and say we have been paying royalties from 2014 when the judgment came out in the tribunal. However, monies have not been flowing to artists, and this is why we're saying this bill needs to strengthen that and make sure that there's clear processes on how monies can be expedited from the collecting societies to the artists. Chair, I'd like to just jump to the last issue, which is local. Okay. So the insertion of section 39B, subsection, or that's CL, CL. So local content regulations are already regulated by ICASA, which is the constitutional mandated body to regulate local content. So now to give these powers to the meant to the DTI to now regulate local content, this just will be an unconstitutional, and the DTI would find itself in court if it continues with this. So our recommendation is that this section be removed in its entirety. And just in closing, we'd like to say we support the strategic objectives of the bill, and we remain committed to supporting the creative industry, and we should be cautioned on the ramifications and the dire consequences the bill might have in its current form. Thank you.
Mr. Blamini, it's really not just for you, it's for everyone who participates in the public hearings. We have two bills. The copyright bill is an overarching, broadly overarching, that covers everything. We also have a sister bill, which we will be dealing with, and that is the protection of performers, if I recall. Is that in the final title? Performers protection, right. So I noticed that some of the points that you were making were more suitably identified to deal with that. But what we will do is, because we're dealing with both, we will ensure that that separation is made. But you may wish to come in for those public hearings again, you know, to reiterate what you are saying. All right. It's like the Constitution deals with everything. And then we have separate pieces of legislation. And the copyright is intended to be a broadly overarching piece of legislation in the, you know, following the same principle. So, but thank you very much for your systematic identification of areas. It does help us. And for the proposals you have made. Thank you very much. Now, members, we have dealt with both these issues, meaning the freedom of expression, as well as Khahiso Media, and apologies for my for me leaving, and thank you to Honorable Van Stolkveit, but we did have a member who needs hospitalization, so I'm sure you all appreciate that that also has to be dealt with during this time. So let's engage now on the matter. We have Honorable Williams, Honorable Esterhazen, Honorable McPherson, Honorable Buyani. Right. Thank you. In that order.
Thanks, Chair. First, I just want to welcome both of the presentations. I've got a question for the Freedom of Expression Institute. You said that you wanted to add another section, number 9, on the clause 12. You said that you wanted any transformative use that enables creative expression. Now, I just want to know, how would you then deal with something like, let's say I was to make a cover of a song, a popular song, and I change, say, 10% of the words and 50% of the melody. Would I therefore not have to pay royalties to those people? You know, I just want to know how you would deal with that, especially the way you put it. It says here, the way that you said to us, any transformative use that enables creative expression. So you could just make slight changes to songs, and then you could, you know, you could be like a band that used to do many covers, was UB40. I'm sure they paid a lot of royalties to the bands that they covered. I just want to know how would you get around that exploiting your clause? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Williams. Honourable Esterhazen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On our different presentations, we and just maybe they touch on some of the same cohesive now. Also, page 9. Problem areas funded by, I'm still puzzled by some of the previous presentations, couldn't understand that. The Copyright Amendment Bill could see copyright rest of the institution which commissioned and funded the song or the tune or the creative work because of it's funded by, and that is a problem. Users throughout this copyright amendment bill, and it's also not defined, and it's a problem. Users of copyright material will or can enjoy equal privileges to the content or the creations of this. This means whoever used your song has the potential to legally earn an income from that, which is wrong. And only a court of law can determine whether the user of your music or creative work is fair. This is ridiculous. How many people, this is American users that we've used. In America, if they say, I'll sue you, that means something. In Africa, we would swear at somebody or whatever, but we won't go to that length. Our court takes for years, it's too costly, and too incompetent to use it. We don't use it. So that fair uses adapted from America wouldn't work in South Africa. Madam Chair, thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. He was going to speak at this particular moment in time, but Honourable MacPherson.
Thank you very much. Ms. Fukani, you've spoken about fair use and the positive side of it for users. Can you just elaborate or detail what the positive use or benefits would be for producers or creators of work? Then to Kahiso, I want to agree with you about the royalty rates, what the minister prescribing them. As far as I know, he doesn't have much experience in determining what pieces of music or art are worth. But would it not be detrimental to the minister's own office and having to actually sit and adjudicate basically every day who should be getting paid what every time a song is produced? And surely there are thousands of songs produced every month, and he would have to sit there and work this all out. And what would be a guideline? How would that even work, in your opinion? With Section 13B, would you understand the interpretation of any person with respect to the reproduction of literature to be a government as a whole or specific departments, so they could actually just print educational books without requirement, if that was a definition of any person? And let me just say to you, I think your highlighting of the constitutional mandate of ICASA to be the only person or the only body competent to adjudicate local content shows how badly drafted this bill actually is, and that in fact no legal opinion was sought when the bill was drafted, because I think any junior lawyer fresh out of university would have been able to give the department that sort of basic legal advice.
Thank you, Honourable MacPherson. Look, Honourable Briani did a bit of a flip there, I think, to go and get the bill. Of course, he is new here and didn't realise we've always got extra copies up here. But let me ask my questions and make my comments, and hopefully he will be back by the time he has to say anything. There was a reference by the Freedom of Expression Institute on artificial intelligence. Now, often the issue comes up on music and the rights. A tune is heard, right? And then various people lay claim to this tune, whatever the tune is. But the issue is fast becoming the creation, the development through creative ability, if one wants to put it that way, by artificial intelligence of tunes, which may well sound a little like your tune, if you want to put it that way, but the notes are completely different. I wonder if what you said here takes that into account. And then if an alien developed something, are aliens covered by this? Now, before anyone starts to think I'm talking about comics, I'm not. I'm not talking about comics. This is a very serious discussion when one goes to the Astronautical International Congress. It's a very serious discussion. So we're going to Mars. We're not sure what we'll exactly find there, and we're going to other planets. And by the way, Mars is not owned by any nation on Earth. So, something is created there. How does the ownership get transferred down to Earth? So, it relates to what we may consider artificial intelligence. So it would be helpful if you could suggest wordings which could overcome this so that it keeps the door open for that eventuality through regulation. And by the way, the trip to Mars is taking place in 4 years, so it's not that far away. The other issue here was the issue around the, I'm not sure who was saying it precisely, but in terms of the collecting, was this yourself, Kahiso, who spoke about the collecting agencies? A lot of institutions, independent people and so on, have indicated their concern about the collecting agencies and how, what should define them and what shouldn't. And perhaps you can tell us a little bit more about that. And then Honourable Macpherson has made some reference to this. I'm not sure just where he is at the moment, but what is the current standard royalty percentage rate on any genre, or for example, authorship per se? And if you could clarify the point you made about a piece of music is created, and the words are, of course, created, authored by somebody else, but they are then sung by a third person who may be paid a performer's pay or fee or whatever. How do you propose this kind of royalty to work? So there are three people involved here, plus the specific medium, if you like, that is this. Four people included at the very minimum. What is your proposal? Because that's what I'm interested in getting from you folks. So that it helps us. What is your proposal around this? Do we give everyone 25%, or what do we do? Right. Honourable Buyani, I kept on talking till you returned. Right. Do go ahead.
No, thanks, Chair. I wanted to check through freedom of expression. One, the enabler of the free flow of the information, and also in terms of positive, whether in terms of the development, in terms of rights to user, and also positively in terms of development, the criticism and the review. And also to the Kagiso, whether in terms of whether it's fair use principle, as you said, will open a floodgate of litigation. What is your view in terms of the fair dealing part of it? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Buyani. Do go ahead. I mean, you can both respond to both questions answered or whatever. Go ahead.
So I'm really excited by the trip to Mars that we've been invited on, and I wonder whether, Honourable Chairperson, we could perhaps the two of us be the first to get to Mars, and we could copyright a whole bunch of stuff quickly when we get there and hope that the DTI doesn't make it there with any fair use provisions, because we might do well on Mars then if we own copyright to everything. Now, seriously, I think the issue you raise is not far-fetched. This issue of creation of artistic works not by a human. It's very real in the world today. Many artists who create music are using computer-generated algorithms to generate their music. Many artists, including my 9-year-old and my 11-year-old, are using computerized methods to generate artistic works, which I don't think they would have been able to create without the computer. And on a more commercial note, there's a product called Google Magenta, which I learnt about last week in one of these roundtables with Google, which has access to all the music ever created, or all the music that Google has been able to access. This may partly explain to you why Google is so interested in this area. And then allows artists to create music based on Google's computers doing things, detecting patterns in all existing music, and then creating something new that doesn't follow any exact piece of music, but sort of morphs the tendencies that it finds in those pieces of music. And several artists have been using this artificial intelligence music generation tool called Magenta, which you can find online, to create music. And I think it's a good thing. Lots of artists... So this is also partly, I think, an answer to the question asked, what is the benefit to artists of fair use? You have access to this huge wealth of music that is not... You don't directly copy somebody else's song, but through a computer you can make use of a computer's instinct, a computer's analysis of all music ever created. And that tool would not be possible if it wasn't for the fair use access by a computer to all of that music. And I think it's true to say that Google Magenta can only operate in the United States at the moment, where there's fair use. And were a Cape Town-based or a Joburg-based or a Limpopo-based technology firm wanting to create something similar, it wouldn't be able to, as the legislation presently exists, because it wouldn't be able to access all of that music. So I think that whole area of artificially generated, computer-generated artistic works, or artists helped by computer-augmented creation of artistic works, is fascinating and is something which will be facilitated by this very open-minded reform of the copyright bill. Very specific answer quickly to the question about could I pirate somebody's song, use 80% of the song and only change 10 or 20% and then say, well, that's fair use. No, I couldn't. I couldn't possibly because of clause Section 12 of the Principal Act, subsection B, clause 2, which says that in determining whether an act done is fair, the amount and substantiality of the part of the work affected must be considered in relation to the whole of the work. So as currently drafted, I think it's true to say I couldn't possibly pirate most of a song, because any interpretation of that would say that then I had not performed fair use. And then finally, and that's it. Oh yes, one last thing, just a comment on this idea that fair use is untested in South Africa. This was actually a comment made by Kagiso, but it's made by others, and therefore shouldn't be introduced. The rights of gay and lesbian and transsexual and transgender people had not been tried or tested in South Africa when the Constitution was introduced. It hadn't been tested legislatively in South Africa. That was not a reason not to introduce that provision into the Constitution. Thank you.
May I respond to, I think, some of the questions that Ben didn't address? I think in terms of what Ben has said around your ability to use a cover version of a song and make slight tweaks and changes, I think that's why we look at the fair use doctrine as a positive development, because as Ben has outlined, the kind of four-part test that would make it very clear from a user rights perspective and from a copyright holder perspective what the parameters and limitations are in terms of your ability to use a portion of someone's work as part of your kind of creative self-expression. So there was, I think, a question around the benefits to copyright owners in terms of fair use, which I think Ben sort of addressed, he touched on a little bit. I think if we take a step back and we look at the Section 16 right to access to information, the right to receive and impart information or ideas, And we consider the fact that we live now in a digital age. We live in, you know, this kind of modern information and knowledge kind of economy. I think we also have to look at how do we balance then that greater kind of public policy goal in a digital era of ensuring that everybody has similar types of access to the content that is out there, even though some of it may be sitting under copyright protection. And I think what the benefit of fair use for a copyright owner is, it provides greater clarity in terms of the extent to which somebody may be able to utilize a portion of their work in a way that doesn't substitute for what they originally intended in the market. There was another question. I think there was a comment around perhaps the challenges that the courts might face in addressing fair use in issues in South Africa. I think, as you know, Ben has kind of spoken to, I think it is, if we're committing as a country to wanting to develop and create a certain kind of society, I think that that's one of the kind of commitments or risks that we're going to have to take in order to ensure that we have a more open and inclusive kind of knowledge economy that accommodates everyone. I think I think I'll leave it.
Kahisa.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to, I think, firstly comment on the issue that you raised, Honourable Member, on funded by, the terms funded by. It's very problematic, not just, I think, for broadcasters, but across all sectors of the economy. Because if we can audit on how much content does government fund in this country, would a lot of people be out of business, because government will own half of the copyright works that we have out there in the creative industry. And I'd like to address the issue of the royalty rate that should be prescribed by the minister. I agree, it's impractical. We cannot have the whole point of having legislation and regulations is to have certainty. So in this bill, it's not even stated on what would be what the rate is. At least if we had a set rate which was prescribed in the bill, we'd be debating on, you know, at least we'd be now debating on what is this rate reasonable, feasible, and all those issues. But currently, I don't think it's practical for the minister to prescribe royalty rates. And you do still need to give artists and creators the power to negotiate what they think is fair for the work that they've produced. The term any person, the definition of any person to include government and other institutions, I agree. In section 13, I agree. It would seem that that would be the intention, and we definitely think this should be removed, and we should rather have more clarity as to who should be allowed. So what we have done in the publishing industry is JUTA has been engaging with NFSS and the Department of Higher Education to look into other alternatives. If the whole objective is to allow more access to education, rather than giving a carte blanche for people to copy textbooks as they please, rather NSS and the Department of Higher Education should look into other alternatives like e-books, which we have been proposing to them. It's much cheaper and it's more controllable. On the issue of local content, ICASA has been prescribing local content regulations for the past number of years. The latest ones was in 2016, and they're the appropriate body to do it. This should definitely be removed from this bill. That's our proposal. and chair on the issue of collecting societies and how they must be dealt with. We welcome the existence of collecting societies, and we think they're necessary. However, collecting societies should be regulated as it's set out in the bill currently, and we think that department should look at the issue of distribution plans. So we've been engaging with SAMPRA, and the last time we spoke to them was a few months back, and we asked them why are royalties not flowing to the artists, and there is since 2014. We've been paying royalties, and we were told that the CIPC registrar has not approved the distribution plan yet. So why do we have these cumbersome processes, and we at the same time have to be complaining that artists are starving, they are not getting their monies, and broadcasters are exploiting artists? Broadcasters are not exploiting artists. We are paying royalties, but we need to have processes in place which will ensure that royalties are expedited to get to the artists. On the current standard rate on what the royalty is, there's a formula, Chair. Yes, there's a formula for that. Okay. And fair dealing. We support fair dealing, and we think Head-to-Head has been working very well for us in South Africa. I don't see why we should now introduce a concept which, like fair use, which is not suitable for the context of South Africa. So many presentations have been made already, and so many arguments. I would not dwell too much into that, Chair, but yeah, thank you.
Right. Honourable Kalaku.
Mine, Chair, is just a question of interest. Just to know further about Kagiso Media. Your portfolio, all these aspects of your portfolio, what is the relation between you as media, as Kagiso Media, and them? Do you own them? Or do they actually use Kagiso Media for their further expansion? Yeah, I'm just interested in that. If you see, do you own Judas? Do you own Sonia Entertainment, Television Asia, as Kagiso? That's just as an interest. Another one, which maybe is a question, on your arguments around amendment of Section 22 around the 25-year issue. I do follow your argument there. Of course, as people who will be who might have or will have developed it further by injecting capital, relaunching it, adding some new branding so that is attractive. Do you mean? There's no in-between where the originators of the author of the book or the originators of composers, music, as you have, or in any art, that there's nothing that they must get on, because now you have relaunched it. I see your fear, because it's human in any case. If I get this clause, and after 25 years, I will want to benefit, I'll come back and say, "Now look, I think now the situation is this. This has developed to this level." So, but my question for you, are you saying they must completely not benefit precisely because you have actually invested in it? That's the only question which I see, unless you come with an alternative, I see it very much unfair to those who have created. To be fair, if you say to them, nothing must go to them at all.
Thank you, Honorable Kalaka, Honorable MacPherson.
Thank you. Sorry, I was just running my place. To the Freedom of Expression Institute, I'd just like you to just unpack for me a post on your website on the 25th of June about the public hearings when you make available travel assistance to fund 10 people, one per organization, and that these grants are primarily intended for those to comment on user rights provisions in the bill. Can you just understand or unpack whether that was in support of your position, and can you also make a list of who those 10 people were that received the funding, please?
Now, with respect to that point, I don't have it in front of me, notwithstanding the technology that's available. So what we will need to do, that will come up again tomorrow, please make that available to Mr. Herman so that he can make it available to members. Otherwise, you put us at a disadvantage. I think it's an important point you are raising. So that question we will raise again tomorrow. Where are you? You'll need to be here. Thank you. So please get the link up so that we can all have it available to us. Right, Honourable Esterhazen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to say this bill is a proposed, a whole series of proposed laws that fly in the face of the rule of law, which should be predictable and certainty and rationally law-making. We some of the amendments in the Copyright Act, creative people, artists and musicians are being compromised, because it not only makes it okay for people to abuse their work, but it also makes it lawful to do so. And I think we as this or a government, before any new laws can proceed, we must decide, and this committee and this isn't, will this maybe harm the economy or unjustly violate the rights of people? And we must make that decision. And I think this will. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Esterhazen. Now, this is something that I believe will have to come back to us, because there was an expression made here by yourself, Kahiso, I think it was, that everyone's very happy here in South Africa with Fair Deal. They're all very happy. What are the list of institutions and artists that are so happy when they've written to me to do another bill? So I'd very much like this list, and I can share it with the other members. But that's what you said here to us today. They're very happy. We're very happy. So who is we? That's what we need to know. Is it Kagiso representing who? So please provide us with that list. seen as you've got the list available, no doubt, tomorrow morning at before 12. Thank you. So you don't have to answer that now. Respond to the issue that Honourable Kalaka has raised, not the issue that today that Honourable MacPherson has raised, because we need to have access to it, and then the issue that Honourable Esterhazen has raised, and not my issue until tomorrow before 12. Over to you.
Chair, I'll respond to the question regarding the portfolio. Kagiso Media has got various relationships with all the brands that are reflected on the portfolio. Most of them are owned. Some of them are joint ventures. Some of them are joint ventures, and some are associates, as well as wholly owned entities. For instance, Jacaranda, we own 80% of it. East Coast Radio, we own 100%. But I can give you a list of the various ownership levels of our portfolio.
And thank you, Chair. Just to answer the question on the 25-year assignment, so as Kagiso Media, we wear different hats. We not only broadcasters, but we also creators of content. We are owners of content. So we work with musicians, artists, actors. So we have a vested interest in ensuring that artists, they get what's fair to them. And that's why we support the strategic objectives of this bill. And in, we believe there should be a compromise, a balance that's reached in terms of after 25 years, what should happen in terms of should the artists themselves be given an opportunity to renegotiate, but it should not be just prescribed by the bill that definitely the 25 years assignments should vest directly back to the author, as you would now have unintended consequences where you'd find that when I negotiate with you upfront on painting a picture for me or designing a logo for me, I'll now negotiate a lower royalty rate because I know that after 25 years you will come back to request for more money. And it's the reality of what's happening on a daily basis where you would negotiate with an art, with an artist, you pay him the price that he sets. He says, okay, I want 500,000 for this. You pay him 500,000 and then you invest over 10 years. And after 25 years, you find that it's now worth 200 million. Now, is it fair that the value that you have created in investing in this work should now just vest directly back to the author? I think there should be the legislator should look into this and see what compromise can be reached, as you don't want to have those unintended consequences.
Much. But as you see, we are expecting a response as soon as possible. And then Honourable MacPherson's issues as well can be addressed. All right? So we'll get that from you through Mr.
I've
Herman.
I've sent it already to Mr. Herman.
Thank you very much. Now, we're going to release you for the moment so that we can call Composers, Authors and Publishers Association, CAPASO, and then the South African Guild of Editors should also be here. Where are you? Where is the South African Guild of Editors? Right? That's not the place to be, ma'am. Just come down. least 7 empty seats. And so you need to come close here, because we're running you together, meaning you'll follow one after the other and then questions. Are we all clear about that? It is now 25-1. Right. So what you do have then, looking at the Composers, Authors and Publishers Association, you now have 25 minutes, a maximum of 30. And I will cut you off then. I'll just tinkle the glass at 25 so that you can wind up.
Thank you,
Madam. So we are talking to Compasio, where is it? Yeah, Mr. Ntobo, Business Affairs Manager, who's that there? And Mr. Matsoukas, is that right? Chairman, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Honourable members, there have been many conflicting submissions made to this committee from various sectors, both day before yesterday and today. Hopefully I come to you with something of a unique perspective that you have not heard before, since I wear several hats.
Oh.
I am indeed yet another lawyer and director of a music industry association, but I am also an author, a lecturer in copyright law and music law, a publisher, and indeed a user. But first and foremost, I am, and always have been, a musician, and proudly so. I play the drums, ma'am, and I write lyrics. Creating and playing music is my passion. It was at one time my only occupation, and still today remains a daily pursuit. I have therefore been persuaded by my colleagues to leave the technical aspects of the bill to my colleague Wiseman next to me, and rather to spend my allotted introductory time, just a few minutes, telling you my own personal story, which hopefully you will see becomes apposite at my conclusion. Bearing in mind my unusual combination of perspectives, I hope this will be of value. I was a member of a very well-known band that created 3 gold albums, 5 number one hit singles, and toured this country's length and breadth several times. Now, despite my law degree, I did not understand what my rights were in respect of my musical works. We had huge airplay on almost every radio and television station in the country. People wanted to use our music left and right, but I did not know my rights, and therefore did not know my bargaining power. 2 very important words. Studying the principles of copyright on a superficial level at university was one thing indeed, but truly understanding the intricacies of the music industry and its royalty streams was completely another. One simply could not learn the sui generis principles of music law at any university in South Africa. So despite all the use of my compositions and performances by various users, I did not earn the income that I should have. Far from it. In truth, little has changed over the years. There have always been users and creators. I have stated that I am both, but not, honourable members, in respect of the same work. They, the broadcasters, promoters and others, were users of my work and I was the creator. But I remained ignorant since their use and exposure dangled the luster of fame before me. And nothing is different today, only the names of some of the users involved and the fact that the methods used are largely digital. The users who still want to use my musical content and that of my fellow musicians from whom you will hear shortly, of course, for as low a price as possible, as they did then, despite laws which at least in principle protected me, they still do. The fact is that at that time I was embarrassingly unaware of the power of my own copyrights and performances. I was unaware of the bargaining power, those 2 words again, that copyright gave me. My band had just been on the biggest South African musical tour of that decade. We filled every venue, including the Good Hope Arena down the road here. We expected to come home and purchase the proverbial luxury cars and houses on the hill. But that never happened. Not because the laws were wrong, but because we were ignorant of those laws. My own band were looking to me for answers. So, Mr. Fancy Pants lawyer, they asked, what do we do? I had no idea. I did not even know the difference between a performing right, a mechanical right, a synchronization right, a neighboring right, nor any of the other myriad of rights that have been described to you in these proceedings. But I did, at least from my studies, know that there was this thing called copyright, which was supposed to protect me. So I started researching, reading, consulting, and what I found over those years amazed me. My band were my first client. I had rights of which I was not aware, nor were my bandmates aware. I had signed contracts which should, in retrospect, have had far better terms than they did. We were not without the assistance of the law. We just did not know how to access or understand it. Other artists seem to be in the same position. As I researched, many other musicians, some highly celebrated ones, began consulting me because this very strange animal called music law was such a rare skill. I helped wherever I could. I negotiated better contracts for artists. I assisted them in exploiting their copyrights to the full where I could. Yes, I made mistakes, but I continued learning as all these artists approached me, often each with a different and unique problem. Many of these were artists whose works had been used or sampled without permission. And I urge you, honorable members, not to believe for a second that any creator wants this to happen. The months of research turned into years, all done for my own educational goals. The consultation notes became a lecture book, the lecture notes became a handbook became my first textbook. Now, some years later, I've written what I hope is a respected book on South African music law, contracts, and business, now in its fourth edition. Will there be a fifth, you might ask? Well, I hope so. At this point, Madam Chair, I could joke that we will have to see what the final act states, particularly in regard to educational exemptions, but I will desist from doing so. Surprisingly, then music publishers and labels also started consulting me. Thereafter, collecting societies and other industry bodies, and then finally government itself. But always, without exception, whether lecturing, writing, drafting, whatever I was doing, my goal was always to side with the artist and the composer, because I am one. Over the years, I've realized one simple fact, that copyright is the key. If content is king, copyright is the emperor. As these artists consulted me over the years, I advised them wherever possible to retain their copyrights, or at least to assign their copyrights only on favorable contractual terms. Why? Because without thriving composers and performers, there is no music industry. I teach my students at the academy at which I teach, how to negotiate better contracts, or if they cannot do so, and they are not successful, how to go it alone in the industry, retaining their own copyright ownership. At the risk of compromising my humility, I can state honestly that I teach musicians about the value of their copyrights, the bargaining power that gives them, and how not to repeat my mistakes. I suppose
your colleague will be coming in when you've spoken now for nearly 10 minutes.
I shall conclude shortly, Madam Chair. Ladies and gentlemen, when the CRC report came in, we were overjoyed. But one can only speculate how the spirit of the CRC report has been lost. A new Copyright Act does not come along every day. We have one shot at this. As author, educator, lawyer, publisher, and user, but above all as musician, I implore this committee not to reduce the rights afforded to us as creators, but to embrace this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to strengthen them. Do not reduce my or any other author's incentive for writing a book or my students' incentive for creating more music. Fair dealing is only fair if it is carefully considered and thereafter specifically legislated to be fair, and therefore clear. Clarity is the key. Freedom of expression and copyright are not mutually exclusive. It has been suggested in this room that there are, in fact, no authors, only creators, that the collecting societies own our copyrights and that the whole South African music system is a colonial one owned by foreigners. This is simply not true. We own it as long as we own our copyrights, and we should keep it that way. The only reason why foreigners might own our creativity is because we are forced to sell it, or even worse, give it to them, as has been implied here, to use. It is indeed true that there is evil doing in our industry, and I don't need to point out where that evil doing sits. There are collecting societies that have gone insolvent as a result. You, honorable members, have the unenviable task of wading through all the information imparted to you here. And I will conclude now, Madam Chair. I implore you to have one goal in mind when you do this. Help us improve our bargaining power, not reduce it. Give us, as creators, more rights, not fewer. Give us the power to negotiate better deals by ensuring that we own our copyrights with certainty and exactitude. Without this, we will be on a slippery slope to financial oblivion. Without clear, unfettered right to own and exploit our copyrights completely, except for properly considered, fair dealing purposes, we will have nothing but unpredictability to negotiate with. It is about the bargaining power. Please don't take it away from us. Users should not be permitted to share in our copyrights without our permission, no matter what technological arguments are given, because our bargaining power will be impaired. Our copyrights are our livelihood, and we implore the legislators not to reduce them. Help us embrace the technology companies on level terms, not just on their terms. After all, they do need our creative content to thrive. Help us by putting us in a stronger negotiating position, not a weaker one. And above all, finally, please do not let South Africa become an international experiment. We deserve better than this. I thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Through you, Madam Chair, I'd like to just quickly go through our presentation, and if I may, with your allowance, also provision about 5 minutes of our presentation to allow for our colleagues from the Musicians Association to give an additional musician-centered perspective on the discussions we are about to look through. I'll skip through the introduction as we are trying to get through as many of the points as possible. But in a nutshell, CAPASSA has been in existence since 2014, and in that time, we've managed to distribute over 125 million rand to royalties, composers, and I'll just go through.